This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Dominic Cummings' much-anticipated testimony before Parliament's select committees on Wednesday has proved as volcanic as expected. Cummings blasted the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, alleging that he had lied about his claim to have thrown a protective ring around the care home sector. Andrew Marr spoke to the Vaccines Minister, Nadeem Zahawi, to provide evidence for Hancock's version of events.
Now, I'm using my words very, very carefully, and I really mean this. Do you think now the government threw a protective ring around the care homes?
I think absolutely the government...
Yes,
I do, because, Andrew, it's easy with the benefit of hindsight to learn the lessons, and we will learn those lessons. But when you have a capacity at the time that's constrained by your diagnostics industry, and as you grow it, the system, I can tell you, on the 15th of April, the adult social care plan was published. The system then began to operationalise, as we've done with vaccines. We placed residents of care homes. It's really important. We placed the residents of care homes at the top of the list of phase one of the vaccination programme. They were number one to get that protection. The NHS, when they operationalised that social care plan... took a while as we built up our testing capacity.
Marr also sought information from Zahawi about reports that vaccines could be made compulsory for NHS staff or even offered to children.
Is it the case that NHS workers should have compulsory vaccinations now?
So I think it's important that we ask ourselves the question, just the way we've been talking about the most vulnerable, those residents of care homes and how we protect them if they get infected with COVID or even, dare I say, with flu. Because they're so fragile, they can die. So it's right for us. We've just consulted with the social care workforce around the condition of deployment, having to be vaccinated. One of the things that's come through is that maybe the whole of the care and healthcare system should be looked at, including the NHS. So it would be remiss. It would be irresponsible of us as a government and ministers not to ask that question, not to think about it and consider it, because clearly, people being infected in hospital through COVID or, dare I say, in other years, in flu, who are very fragile. There is a precedent for this, of course. Surgeons have to be vaccinated for hepatitis B before they can practice as surgeons, rightly so, because there is a responsibility to protect those that are most vulnerable, and it's right to look at that.
One other really difficult moral dilemma, ethical dilemma for ministers now is whether children should be vaccinated. What's your view?
So we've seen the US regulator and the Canadian regulator approve the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for 12 to 15-year-olds. Our regulator will look at the clinical trial evidence of this. The Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation will look at this because... vaccines need to be safe for children because you're, of course, protecting them. Some children suffer from long COVID, but you're protecting their families and their communities. In terms of deployment, do you know what you would do?
I mean, it's a difficult decision.
It's not just
a scientific one. It's a real moral decision. So what would you do?
It is. So, children being out of school because schools were shut have a mental healthcare impact on those children. I think the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation have to consider all these things. All right. I will absolutely follow their recommendation.
Trevor Phillips also spoke to Zahawi about the Prime Minister's secret wedding to Carrie Symons yesterday afternoon.
Did you get an invitation to the wedding yesterday?
No, but I want to congratulate the Prime Minister and Carrie Symons on tying the knot.
The fact that this came out of the blue, is this a hint to all couples who are waiting and delaying their marriage, hoping that after June the 21st, they'll be able to invite more than 30 people? Was the Prime Minister's and Carrie Symons' decision to go yesterday a hint that there's no point? June the 21st is not going to be what we hope it was going to be.
No, I wouldn't extrapolate anything from that, Trevor. On the 14th of June, we will set out very clearly the data that we are continuing to gather from, of, of, step three, which was on the 17th of May, and then we'll share that with the nation, as the Prime Minister has done in each and every step, from step one, two, and three, and then, of course, step four. We continue to vaccinate at scale. We are almost at 39 million people now with at least one dose, and almost 25 million people with two doses. So I think the important thing is to keep going vaccinating at scale, but also share the data on the 14th of June,
okay,
as we have done in the past, to give people the ability then to plan ahead.
Phillips went on to interview Mike Padgham, the chair of the Yorkshire-based Independent Care Group, and asked him about what he had seen on the ground in the early days of the pandemic.
Mr. Cummings said this week that when Matt Hancock said he'd put a shield around care homes, he was telling untruths. Somebody is not telling the truth here. Who do you think was telling the truth?
Well, I can only give it as I see it, and I don't want to accuse. I weren't there to hear who said what to whom. All I would say is I don't believe myself there was a ring of protection thrown around us. In those very early days, it was difficult. We were forgotten. We've been forgotten over decades. That's the only issue in social care. We weren't prepared. We weren't ready. We didn't have the PPE. We didn't have the testing. And it took the government many, many weeks to actually see what was happening in homes, despite our best efforts and protestations. That is why providers, I think, without their efforts, the figures, as I said just now, would have been much worse. So they take some credit, particularly the staff, of course.
Ma spoke to Edwin Poots, the newly elected leader of Northern Ireland's Democratic Unionist Party. A key part of Poots' campaign has been his opposition to the Northern Ireland Protocol, the effects of which Poots has judged to be intolerable.
Ursula von der Leyen, who's head of the EU Commission, says the protocol is the only possible solution to ensure peace and stability in Northern Ireland. What is your alternative?
Well, I'm not sure where Ursula von der Leyen is looking at, because we have violence on our streets in Northern Ireland that hasn't been the case for years, and that's in the back of this protocol. And it vexes me because the European Commission over the years have put their heart and soul into winning peace in Northern Ireland, and the current batch of commissioners don't seem to care for the peace process in Northern Ireland, and that really needs to change. That attitude needs to change. They are doing demonstrable harm to every individual in Northern Ireland, and it's having a devastating impact.
Do you want the British government to trigger Article 16, which would put a break to all of this now?
They have the grounds to do it, because in terms of economic and societal damage, that is very evident. So leading food suppliers are saying they are, when this grace period comes in, are going to struggle to supply hospitals, to supply schools, to supply prisons with food. We have a circumstance where medicines and medical devices, over 90% of them come from Great Britain to Northern Ireland. New modern cancer drugs not being able to get in. So all of the criteria can be met and easily met.
Poots was interviewed alongside Maroš Šefčovič, a vice president of the European Commission, and asked him about Poots' request for Boris Johnson to trigger Article 16.
If that happened, what would you do? Would you start to build a hard border on the island of Ireland?
What we have said many times, and I think that our commitment to the Great Friday Belfast Agreement is absolute. And the key prerequisite for that is avoidance of the hard border. Therefore, we've been negotiating the protocol for 4 years because we jointly came to the conclusion that this is best possible solution. And I think that the respect of Good Friday agreements is not only important to UK, Ireland, Northern Ireland, but also to very important co-guarantor like United States of America. So I think that here we should simply respect the international commitments. And I think that what we need in our EU-UK relationship is more of a cooperation, joint approach, and not unilateral actions, because okay, I think it would further sour our relationship. And I think to build it on top of the pictures which have been dominating the European press, when European citizens have been put in detention cells or being fingerprinted just because they wanted to visit the United Kingdom, it doesn't help the atmospheres. And therefore, I think that we need to calm down, focus on how we are going to resolve the problems, and focus on the future.
On Times Radio, I spoke to Franek Viachorka, an advisor to the Belarusian opposition leader Svetlana Tikhanovskaya.
about what the consequences should be after the journalist Roman Protasevich was abducted when his flight to Vilnius was unexpectedly diverted to Minsk.
We've obviously seen the UK advising flights not to go through Belarusian airspace. We've seen a response from the EU, and we've got the plans from Joe Biden for sanctions against members of the Belarusian government. Does that come anywhere close to the kind of deterrent you want to see from world leaders?
We were very glad to see the joint position. European Council took anonymously the resolution, the decision to support Belarusians and to sanction the regime. We think that UK, EU, US and Ukraine must do it together and must sanction three major sectors of Belarus economy, which belong directly to Lukashenko and people and his cronies. It's petrochemicals, it's wood and it's steel. If the sanctions will be adopted, there will be a chance to end violence and release political prisoners. Lukashenko is really afraid of sanctions. We are in touch with Dominic Raab, with Wendy Morton of UK government.
So Dominic Raab has been constructive. He's been helpful.
Sure. You know, Dominic Raab was very supportive. Mm-hmm. This was a very, very kind call. He expressed the support to civil society and media, and UK takes the leading role in support of Belarus in OSCE. UK initiated Moscow mechanism on Belarus. The UK raised the Belarus issue in the G7 meeting of ministers last month. We still hope that UK will invite Svetlana Tikhanovskaya to London. This would be fair, and this is very important to raise awareness about what's going on in Belarus. And we really hope that UK will take a strong stance.
And finally, Sweden's former Prime Minister Carl Bildt, who now works as a special envoy for the World Health Organization, spoke to me and Tom Newton-Dunn about the future of the pandemic.
Just at the top of the interview, you used the word complacency, perhaps in Europe, perhaps in the United States, on what is happening over the world. It feels like we're exiting the pandemic now, the rest of the world isn't. But why do you use the word complacency? That's quite critical.
It is quite critical. No, I agree with it. It is. I see that as a substantial risk that we in Europe and in North America, we think this is over. And it ain't over. Because first we are affected by the global economy taking a substantial hit by what is happening in other parts of the world. I think there was a very strong statement by the Director General of the IMF the other day, saying today vaccine policy or pandemic policy is the number one thing that we have to do in terms of economic policy to get it under control. And then the different variations, the mutations that are... I'm not a scientist, but I do listen to the scientists quite a lot. And they tell me it is not a probability, it's a certainty that if this goes on, new versions, new variants, new mutations will appear. And we've seen them being, as we've seen in the British one and the Indian one now, significantly more contagious and perhaps at some point in time more dangerous.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.